Welcome to our podcast,
Band BFFs,
the podcast where we make your music selection less complicated.
On today's episode, we are going to be discussing Ghost Ship, arranged by Michael Story. Cheers to starting the conversation.
Okay, Ghost Ship is a great little grade one piece on the Texas PML.
It's a traditional sea shanty.
Absolutely. You can't go wrong with a good old sea shanty. Yeah. All right. It's about 2 minutes and 15 seconds long. It's a really short piece, 70-something measures in 3/4 time. It does have a key change. It starts in the key of concert E flat or C minor and modulates to the key of F or D minor. So that's sometimes a pretty tricky key change for younger
especially
players.
Especially for little trombones that can't decide between 3 and 2.
It is single parts on clarinet, trumpet, alto, all of that. The low brass and low reed part is unison. Very minimal percussion. While there are lots of percussion instruments, they are very rarely playing at the same time. So this is a piece that you could get away with playing with a very small percussion section.
Like, honestly, probably 3. You could do it with 3 humans. Yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
Better with 4, but yeah. Okay, so this piece starts off very slow, and then it gets faster after a little while with some percussion effects. It has like a little suspended cymbal. It's supposed to sound like, you know, the waves
the water rolling in and out. So you want to be, I mean, I know it sounds silly, but you do want to make sure that your percussion
sounds good.
That's right. Yeah. You need to practice that suspended cymbal roll, ebb and flow, so that it gives the musical effect that we're trying for.
Like going from the edge of the cymbal towards the bell and back out, and not overdoing it to where you're like, what is happening? Are they doing that on purpose or not?
You know? Exactly, yeah. Exactly.
And it's kind of a special effect.
Right.
Yep. At 5, the flutes alone enter along with this continued suspended cymbal roll. So you should not play this piece unless you feel really confident in your flute section.
They are alone in your clarinets. Yes.
But right now it is flute only for about 10 measures.
Very
they play
exposed.
Alone, yes. Dotted quarter note and eighth note rhythms in 3/4, but nothing ridiculous.
What I think makes it a little more challenging is the dotted quarter rhythm happens on beat 2 instead of beat 1. So you're not feeling 1 and 3, but you're feeling 1, 2, and 1.
Yeah, and 1.
So it feels a little different.
Mr. Story did, however, give flutes like breath marks together. So we're not having to work on phrasing through a bar line and things like that. So he actually marked a lot of the breath marks in throughout the piece to make it be something unified for the group. Again, as Laura mentioned, lots of beat 2 dotted quarter notes. It goes up to a B flat on the flute, so it's not super duper high. But of course, you would want to make sure that your students can make a great sound since they're completely exposed. And it is not even all tongued. There are various articulations, some slurs, but nothing ridiculous. After they end, there's like a little chimes hit with them, and then there's one measure of silence with the suspended cymbal still rolling, and then the majority of the rest of the band comes in at 15, but not everybody, and the melody transfers over to trumpet and clarinet.
And alto has a part with them as well, a harmony part, the alto and horn part. The low brass accompaniment part here is really straight ahead. You've got dotted half notes followed by a quarter rest and quarter notes on beat 2 and 3. So I think the part itself is easy standing alone, but you have to make sure that those dotted half notes touch the rest and that we're giving a good strength of articulation. This is a very moderate tempo. We're talking 80-85 BPM here, but you want to make sure that the strength of articulation on all of the notes is clear, especially some of the low brass have repeated notes in this. So just making sure, again, that strength of articulation is clear and comes through. Long notes always touch the rest. Katie already mentioned the fact that Michael Story has written in a lot of the breath marks. While I think that's awesome and I very much appreciate it, I think it's still easy to make it sound immature. So you can still coach your students on how to take quick breaths.
Oh, for sure.
We even, like, I have an exercise that I do with my ensembles where we practice taking different values of breath. We do it in our daily drill where we are playing an 8-count concert F, and we practice it taking a 2-count breath, then we practice it taking a 1-count breath, then an 8th note, an 8th count breath, an eighth note's worth breath, and then a triplet, a third of a triplet breath. So now with a non-varsity or sub-non-varsity, you might not want to go quite that far, but I think it's important if we expect the kids to practice taking quick breaths, quick metered breaths in music, you have to practice it in your fundamentals so that they are getting that repetition.
And then speaking of breath marks, because, you know, that's what we're talking about, I actually write in my parts when I mark them, I'll write in the beat that they breathe on in their part. So if it's marked in for them, in this case, they're breathing on the and of three, I will write like one under the quarter note and then two and three, and then I'll write the and right underneath the breath mark and circle them together. So that way the students know exactly where I'm going to take a breath. Again, that kind of goes back to what you're saying. It's teaching them
how to meter it
to, and how not to just take like, it's a breath, I'm just going to breathe forever, you know? And, you know, somebody
that's a really good idea.
Yeah. And somebody very wise once told me, and I learned, Pete Tolhyson, thank you so much. He was teaching some students with me, and he said the note before the breath mark should always be longer than the breath.
Yep.
And so that always sticks with me, and I say that to my own students, but that is a good way to teach younger students exactly when to breathe. You're going to breathe right when your foot tap goes up, and then you have to come right back in. And like those low brass kids, like you said, with that dotted half note, one and two and three and off. Two. So they're yes. really breathing on the and of one. So I would go so far as to write the and put a breath mark myself so that they understand they're going to have a half count breath before they have to come back in on two, three, one.
That's exactly
so,
right.
Yeah. So this is a lot of information, but hopefully that would help you in any situation with if breath marks are written in for your kids, how to teach them to take it and not just, oh, yep, breathe there, you know.
Exactly. There are a couple of accidentals, just concert anatural accidentals throughout here, only in the melody part. So that would be something I'd be intentional about making sure your students are aware of, and then find when the concert A flat comes back in. And that would be something I would absolutely pre-mark. Make sure is marked in their music, yep. For sure.
A little, and measure 20, the same melodic instruments that had the melody before, they have a quarter note, breath mark, three and the three and, of course, are pickups into the next phrase. So that's another great instance where we would practice ta, 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 da, ta. So that way they don't clip the quarter note that happens right before.
Which that's the biggest thing that we hear, like, big gaps in the sound. I also talked to my ensemble about every end of a note needs to end. And I got this from Kathy Johnson, since we're like sharing all of our, that's what good teachers do. You steal. So Kathy Johnson said this, that your notes should end with an AH sound. So we want them to end with a vowel sound, and and I love the idea of having that H at the end of it, because it's impossible to clip the sound if you think about it with an AH ending. So that, again, that would be something I would practice with the students so that it doesn't sound clipped, it doesn't sound choppy.
Yep. And the low brass are continuing to play underneath that anyway, so hopefully that would continue to make the seamlessness be there. Then we have this like little transition moment where the melody are playing on beat one with dotted half notes. Flutes and oboes have rest, two, three, rest, two, three, and we're crescendoing, crescendoing. And this is where they have to watch you, because then at 25, it's suddenly faster. But faster is moderate, 112.
So not crazy fast, right? Yeah.
And it's like a boat horn goes off, because it's called Go Ship. So there's like the trumpets are in a major second, and then the alto saxophone has a color note with them too. So it does sound like very much like a boat horn honking.
Yeah, it's a cluster chord for yep. sure.
And then the lows just have staccatos, one and three and two and one. But that's harder to count than you think.
That's
you
right. It feels weird. Like everything has been in three,
it
and
feels
you're feeling
like four.
That's right. Yeah. You're feeling these, like I call it my, you know, with my kids, we talk about triangles and squares. You're feeling this triangle time signature, but you're feeling this square placed over the triangle. Now this transition, this would be something you need to isolate and practice a lot, because your snare drummer
is very active.
Yeah. It comes in with, you know, one and two and a three and one and a two and three and a one. So it's a, and they need to be right in time. And then, of course, you have the low brass and low reeds with their one. And so that all has to line up perfectly with the percussion. Yep. So that transition is something that you will need to spend time practicing. It's basically a two-measure transition. Once you get that down, then you should be, you know, confident through the end of this, you'll maintain the same tempo.
So that first boat horn moment at 25 is forte. Then two measures later, like Laura mentioned, actually pickups into it. The clarinets take over the melody. And this section also has to be really good. But it's written in a great tessitura range, for yeah. the clarinet. They're going to sound really nice. They can play a little bit more seamlessly. And then two measures later, the boat horn comes back in again, but this time mezzo forte. So it's like the boat is going out to sea.
That's exactly
and
right.
And so it's getting softer and softer. Clarinets just keep on trucking along. They're playing the melody. Two measures later, we get a mezzo piano boat horn. So it's like the lows and the trumpet and horn and alto are just kind of, actually the horns haven't even played yet. They're getting further and further away, playing softer and softer. Clarinets are just continuing to play their little sea shanty. And then at 35, the boat is gone and it is just the clarinet.
Completely exposed.
Not
no
even
percussion
or
That's
anything.
Right.
It's just clarinet. So they're like, they have to be, again, pretty good. Not rushing their fingers when they have eighth notes, that sort of thing.
This section is almost all slurred. So it is a section that I would teach to my group. The section right here at, is this 35? 35, where the clarinets are completely exposed. It is almost all slurred. I would teach it to your students first, articulated.
Yep.
So make them tongue, make them get it right in time, make them align their tongue and fingers, and then take the tongue away and make their fingers still feel the rhythm. I talk so much to my students about that. Your fingers have to physically feel the rhythm when your tongue is not involved, because we don't have the tongue to anchor the rhythm on.
Right. And this melody, though, does not have any dotted quarter notes. So it's just quarter notes and eighth notes throughout their melody. And then another pickup melody in flute and oboe, this time at 43. And so now the rest of the band joins in, but they just have an accompaniment line. Half note, rest, half note, rest, half note, quarter, half note, rest. So the upper woodwinds are continuing to kind of let this sea shanty mm-hmm. live on. Percussion is still doing a lot of nothing. There's little triangle hits every once in a while, but not a lot from them. And then at 51, that same group keeps going, but now we're adding in a little counter melody with
yeah.
alto and horn and tenor sax.
And this part right here where the melody is going, there's a lot of, similar to what the clarinets had earlier, a lot of slurred passages where it's quarter notes, one, two, three, all slurred, and then one, two, three, all slurred. The tendency is going to be for them to clip the last note of the slur, right? Ta. Ta. So working really hard to make sure the last note of that slur is full value and leads into the next measure.
I feel like when we play, it's been a very long time, but I either drew a tenuto on
yes.
the last note or an arrow leading to mm-hmm. the next measure so that it sounds more seamless. And then this melody continues on, and then we get to our key change transition. Two measures before that, we have a couple accidentals adding
leading
in
at 57. Leading up to that key change, that's
yep.
right.
A big crescendo from everybody. There's a full breath mark for the whole band on the and of two. And then the band comes in on a pickup note beat three. And it's an accidental for most everybody. And then we have hit concert F, D minor at 59 with flute, oboe, clarinet, and trumpet melody.
The accompaniment part is just hanging out on dotted half notes. The snare drum part is back in with that same active 16th note pattern that we had when the tempo initially changed. So just wanting to align the pulse between your percussion, your snare drummer, and what's happening in the melody and in the long notes, making sure that everybody is feeling that subdivision of the beat and moving together. This is the same melody, just in a different key
yep.
That we had earlier in the piece. So all of the things that you did earlier, you can apply to this section. We've just modulated. We're just in a different key.
This is, again, another great endorsement for marking parts, especially for younger students, because this would be a great opportunity to mark like the new key signature notes for the kids the first time they happen, like trumpets are playing F sharp now, making sure that they play B natural, you know, as they go lower again, you know, in measure, sorry, I'm trying to find it, 62, they go down to a low B. You want to make sure they get that. The trombones have A naturals now and E natural. So marking that for them so they can hear that tonality, I think, is so important.
The quicker they learn it, the better.
Yep. Then we continue this melody. Everybody's got to pick up into measure 67 again on beat three. The trumpet, flute, oboe, clarinet, upper people still have the melody. We've got a couple more accidentals written in. Another full band breath. So this piece, you would definitely want to practice everybody breathing at exactly the same time. And I would do like that one measure, one and two, three, one, and making sure that beat three has a tenuto written on it or an arrow so that it leads into the next phrase.
Well, and he
three
is
leads
even,
to one and three, four.
Absolutely. Yeah. And he has even written in here, like right before the breath mark, those people that have an articulated quarter note before the breath mark, he has written a tenuto mark on it. So it's clear he wants that note to be as full value as possible.
Right.
So, I mean, it is something, I know it may seem like crazy detail, but it is something I would spend time practicing
for sure.
So that it that can make your group sound so immature.
Yeah.
And obviously that's not what we want. Now we're wrapping it up, the last, you know, closing it out with the same melody, the same theme, everybody moving together. It's a little more energetic. Everybody's playing at this point. We end on a nice big long note, a happy little chord, low voices coming back with that eighth note motif that we had earlier, one and three and to end, and then all ending together. You want to make sure that the last note resonates and has a good sound. You've got people tonguing on the last note, the low voices tonguing on the last note. You have some mallet percussion, chimes that are dinging right there, or a chime that is dinging right there at the very
end. And
that's
the last thing you hear.
That's
so
it. And it needs to ring.
It kind of sounds like a boat, you know, like a boat bell chime, and then it's the last thing. So this piece is super cute. It's fun.
It's deceptively challenging.
It is deceptively challenging. But it would be a great piece if you want to look for something with minimal low brass, minimal trumpet. We didn't even mention that.
Yeah.
Trumpets don't play hardly
at all. For probably
half
the piece.
Yeah, and horns don't play very much either. So if you've got a good flute section and a good clarinet section, this might be a good one for you to look at.
Yeah, to showcase those groups of kids.
Yes. Well, we hope you will consider programming Go Ship in the future, and thank you for joining us on this episode of
Band BFFs.